Okay, so we're all the way up to chapter 8, which means we're past the midterm, and you didn't even have to take an exam. So, in this chapter, we talk about the data store. And data store is where Google really begins to deviate from the rest of the world. This material is copyright, Creative Commons, like all the other material, including the audio that you're listening to if you're coming on the internet. So this is where we start seeing why we did all this other stuff. Google's everything at Google. Google doesn't do little things. Everything they do is worldwide. Everything they do is big. Everything they do is fast. They're trying to make sure that they're so big and so fast that no one else can be as big as fast as them. And they like keeping people like Yahoo and Microsoft, you know, cowed by their big awesomeness. And so the internet, the entire internet, and every single human's email on the planet is just a lot of information. And you just aren't putting that in one MySQL database, no matter how good your database administrator is. So relational databases just don't work. So they have a thing called Bigtable. And, you know, I've been looking at Bigtable for a while, and I sort of get it. And I watch the talks over and over and over again, and I sort of get it. The best way to think about it is it's a giant sorted array with these cool keys. And it's all about the keys. And if you think of Google as your data is spread across 5,000 servers, and we're going to send a query to all 5,000 servers simultaneously, and each of those 5,000 servers has a tiny fraction of it, and it's going to look for the key and then hand back its fraction, and then it reassembles all those pieces. And that's how a query happens in Google. It asks every 10,000 servers who each own 1/10,000th of your data, give me this chunk, and it goes whoop. And one of the things at Google is minimize the number of seeks and number of disk reads. And so it wants to get to the point where it's, I mean, seriously, this is what they are working on. They want to get to the point where your application seeks once and reads a few sectors and then is done. So they carefully get everything sorted so when you send them the key, the selection, they can get to a platter and they know what platter it's on. I mean, this is why they're fast. Because they don't think about like, oh, theory. No, there's no theory. It's like there's a spinning disk and we're going to get to the data as fast as possible. Seeks are what kill you. Transfer rate doesn't kill you so bad, but you still don't want to transfer too much. Okay? So I can't explain this. But the great news is Google has got some super, super smart people. And I know some of the people that do some of the real big Google things, and they'll sit in the back of these talks at Google I.O. Oh, and by the way, if you get a chance to go to San Francisco to Google I.O., do. It's only $100 for academics. It's a great time, free ice cream, good parties, Mountain Dew 24/7, and really bright people and great thing, and it's only $100 to go. You go to Microsoft Conference, it's $3,000 to go to Developer Conference. You go to Apple Developer Conference, it's $3,000. You go to Google and you're academic, it's $100. They like us. They want us to believe. I believed enough to write a book. So, here's one that I really like. And I'm not smart enough to claim that I understand this. I just watch it each time I need to feel closer to it. I watch it again and again and again and again. Okay? He's a good guy. Right before he gave this talk, I handed him a copy of the book that some of you are now in possession of. But he didn't hold it up during the talk. I wish he had. Like, sweet book! But he didn't do that. Okay, Model View Controller. Now we talked about that. So basically, the reason this thing is called the model is because of Model View Controller and because Django called them models too. So we're ripping Django off again. And so the idea is, unlike the traditional database, Google's Bigtable spreads across lots of servers. Spreads you as thinly as it possibly can spread you. Now, if you're so tiny, it's not going to spread you out so much. But let's just say you're medium-sized to large. So it wants to store the data, and it wants to retrieve the data, and it kind of wants to do that once per request-response cycle, if possible, if not zero. Okay? And so the data bit is called the model. And model view controller, okay, I said that before. Normally, I teach this class on different days. So now we're going to go to AE10 Data Store. Now, if you get stuck, you can always cheat and look at AE10 data store, but that would take all the fun out of this. And Google models rip off Django models, but the implementation and the query syntax is completely different. So Django's models are an object relational mapper, which is basically storing things in SQL, but that's not the case. The model abstraction looks the same. And the interesting thing is that in the Java version of Google App Engine, the object model looks the same as a Java ORM, but then the queries are completely different because the queries are where you have to like get things expressed the right way. So, the first thing that we do to our application is we import a new library, the DB library, okay? And then, somewhere near the beginning of our application, we define a model. We define a model by defining a class, and in that class, we extend a class called db.model, and then we put a series of, as it were, member variables, and we make them DB string property, DB string property, DB string property. And so that is the definition of a model. That's literally all you have to do to define storage. And then the way that you sort of allocate a new thing is you in a sense call the constructor and then take the name, account, and password and stick it in passwords. And if you want to store it in the big table, you just say put. And there it goes. Very much like Ruby on Rails, very much like a highly abstracted ORM. Now, if we look at the, so those are lines you got to add to your program, if you're following along in your text editor. There are a number of different properties, string properties, integer properties, date time, blobs, reference. Reference is kind of the joiny, their version of joiny stuff, but it's not like join. It's really references, it's pointers. And they're pretty good documentation, so I don't replicate the documentation. And so the application that we're going to do is we're going to create this model, and then we're going to populate the model. So we're going to make some modifications to our application. We are going to add a new button to our application, a new account button, and the code is in here, I think. There's a new account button, and we're going to have a slash apply URL. We're going to put out a form, and then we're going to add one more button called members that lists all the members and lists their passwords in plain text. This is the ultimate in security. Everyone knows that the passwords can be listed by all logged in users. All users' passwords are listed in plain text by any logged in user. So at least you know that it's got, you know, where you stand in terms of this thing. Okay. I might have to show you some of these things. Hang on. Oh, yikes. I got to show you some of these things. So let me show you a few things that aren't in these slides. So let me show you the modification that you need to make to add the new account button. Okay, so that's the first thing we're going to work on. And so now let me make my first change to my application. Okay, so here we are. I'm going to get rid of this. So the first place I'm going to modify is the login screen.htm. Ooh, I should probably bring up the bring that chapter up while I have it, because then I can cheat and paste stuff in. Okay, so this will help you if you go grab chapter 8. So the first thing we're going to do is right here, we're going to edit login screen to add the new account button. Okay? And so login screen account.htm and add the new account button. Okay, so let me bring up my Text Wrangler. Oops, dang it. Okay, so I'm going to go to desktop, workshop, apps, my AE09, and I am going to go into the template and I'm going to add loginscreen.htm. Okay, goodbye. And so the only thing, so if I go, let me get my browser going. So I want to add a button right here that says new account, so I can make a new account. Okay? So the code for that is right here. So I'm just going to rip it off and put it in right here. Let's see if that works. So I'll hit save and I'll go back to my browser. I'll hit refresh and now I have a new account button. Okay? So now I have a new account button. So now I'm going to hit apply. I'm going to hit the new account button and it's going to send me to /apply. But I got nothing, because I have to go into my index file I got to open my index file. So let me show you what to do in the index file. So now I'm going to go to index.py, and if you page down a little bit, you'll see that I'm about to tell you, oh wait, do I tell you this? It's right here. So it's right here. The next thing I'm going to do is right here in the book where it talks about apply handler. And so if I look at my code, it's gotten a bit complex. And what we've got now is this main code is routing URLs to different handlers. So when I see /login, I route it to the login handler, logout handler, and each one of these is like a class. Some of them are pretty simple. DoRender is now a library utility that I wrote way up at the top. So now I need to say, I'm going to add a handler. This is the step of adding a handler. I'm going to say, when I see /apply, route that to apply handler. And again, you have bigger screens, so you can kind of watch this. Okay? Now I'm going to save this on purpose and watch what happens. So I've just added this line right here. I'm going to save it, and I'm going to go back to my browser, and I'm going to press refresh and treat you to a delightful treat. Crash. This is what it looks like when you make a mistake. You get a traceback, right? You get a traceback. You'll see some of these, okay? And so this is saying, oh, hey, global name apply handler is not defined, index.py in main, and son of a gun, if I'm here, and it's like, oh yeah, crap, now I got to add another handler, okay? So I got to add a handler to handle this apply handler, okay? And so I got some code right here to rip off. And I'm going to just start. And I'm going to start by not putting it all in. I'm just going to put the get method in. I'm going to put the apply handler in. And you got to be careful when you do this pasting, because it can get ugly, especially when going from PDF to whatever. And so now most Python people prefer 4 characters rather than 2 characters, and I need to fix everything in my book to be 4 characters because I'm not cool. But some of my stuff is still 2 characters. Much of the book has been fixed to four characters, but not all my sample apps. So what I've got here, now I have a thing that says route slash apply to apply handler, and now I have a class called apply handler that extends web app request handler. I have a get method inside of it that says render apply screen.htm. That render code's that nasty stuff about looking paths up and all that junk, right? And I just kind of got a utility routine up here that's do render, and we're just like, we won't bother looking at that. But I do throw a few values in like handler path and request path. So, but the important thing is this. I've now got a class, and my get request is going to be routed to that. So now I'm going to save it. And then I'll treat you to a different error. Come on. Okay, so now I'm at the apply. So now I'll go back to the regular thing. That's working. I click on login. That's working. I click on new account. That's going to navigate me to slash apply. And now I get nothing. And that's because this template does not exist. So let's go ahead and make a template that exists. So I'm going to make a new file. File new. New text document. Yo, yo, yo. This is a template. And I'm going to save this file. And I'm going to put it in templates. And I'm going to call this applytemplate.htm. Applytemplate.htm. So now I have, if I go back to here, I now have this new thing called apply template. Let me check my HTML, my index code, and oh no, it's not. Oh, I'm a fool. Yep. So let's get rid of that. Let's go fix this. Let's rename this guy. So now I think if I save that and I go back to my browser and I hit refresh, out comes template, right? So now we've got a groovy template, but that's not what we want to put in our template. What we want to put in our template instead is some highly sophisticated HTML. Yikes. I don't have a big enough screen. It's hard to develop on such a tiny screen. Okay, so here's my template. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to rip off a template that we've already got called login screen. Oh, we already got that one. And I'm just going to rip this template off. It already extends base template. Put it in apply screen. And I've got some things like this error string that I print if there's an error, and there extends the thing. And so if I look at the screen I'm supposed to produce, it looks like this. It's got a name, account, and a password, and then a submit and cancel button. Okay? Name, account, password, submit and cancel, and it says new account request across the top. So let me fix that. Let's see, we got that. We'll steal this code. Name, apply. I'll get rid of this new account because we're already in that screen. Welcome, new user. So the book probably gives you something else to put in here. Doesn't really matter as long as it sort of works. So now let's go back and refresh this. And so there we go. Okay. And so now we have a new template. We've inherited all the mechanisms. Now the interesting thing is that because whatever URL doesn't match any of these, they all stay blue. I think that's sweet usability, actually. because we're not on any of these. But so then our problem is Chuck CSEV X. Oh, wait, I got to change it. No. I'm posting to the wrong place. I need to change it so it posts back to apply, not login. Haha. So now I'll go back. Go back to login. I'll go to new account. And hit apply. And nothing happens. And that's because I don't have a post method. If I go back to the code, the only thing I put in to index.py was a get method. There's no post method. So there's no code to respond to a post, so nothing comes out. So now I've got to add the post method. But before I add the post method, I've got to go back and add this stuff. See? Got to add this stuff. Got to add my model. So I'll copy that. You add the model at the top. Yeah?
Is Joe Vernon in this room? Anybody from Adina? Okay,
thanks. Yep. So I just imported a new thing. And then I'm going to define my data model. Ooh, that paste didn't work so well. Sorry about these pastes. Wow. Got to fix the formatting. That must just be my particular text editor. Maybe yours is pasting better than mine. Yeah. Okay, so I need to do that, and that's my database connection, that's everything. There's no more to do here. Okay, so I'll just make sure I refresh and that's all syntactically correct. Okay, so that the model is in now, and now I can go down to the postcode. And this is where we're actually going to store a user. So I'm going to grab this postcode. Oh, this is going to paste like junk. This is going to be really horrible. Wow. I'm going to cheat. Do-do-do-do-do. I'm all set. Thanks. Let me cheat here. I don't want to paste it from here. I mean, I kind of do this on purpose to my students. I make it really hard to paste to make them see it over and over and over again. But I'm going to take it from the cheating location. Shh, don't tell anybody I did this. Pretend that I typed it all. I won't even show you the treachery that I'm about to engage in. So now I got to go down into this handler. Apply handler, and I got to add some postcode. Look how fast I typed that. Okay, and that's just the stuff. So let's walk through this a bit. What's going on here? Session is something that we didn't cover. It's in the book. Don't worry about it. We made a session. It's like all other sessions. So first, I'm going to check to see if the password account our name is blank, and send them back to the apply screen with a snotty message. I just render the apply screen and I say return, and I'm done with this post method. Then I'm going to do a data model lookup. Okay? Ooh, come back. So the next thing I'm going to do is a data model lookup, and that is I'm going to create a query. I'm going to create a query on the user object, and then I'm going to add a filter on the field account and check to see if this account already exists. So this is a query. We haven't really talked to the database yet, but we do have to have the model that exists, and it knows, you know, that this is a user and one of its field names is account. And we've got that way up at the top. We have a user class and it has a field named account and it's a string. Oops, that's login. So if we get, and then we do a fetch with a limit of one. Now, one of the things that when you start doing fetches, they're really draconian. They will actually never give you more than 1,000 results in any query. They want you to be thinking paging. They're not going to let you go through 1,000,000 results. As a matter of fact, every request has a basic limit of 3 CPU seconds. So if you write bad code, your stuff gets blown up at 3 seconds. And then you run out of your allocation really fast. So they don't even let you sit there and grind. They just blow you up. And that's because you could be a dumb programmer. And they don't want you hurting their system. And so this query, it takes a little getting used to that you're only going to get 1,000, but you got to start thinking about paging, and you got to think about paging sort of from the very beginning. Okay? And so I'm going to say, fetch me the records that match that filter, and then the results is a list of those records. It's a Python list of those records, and I check to see if I got more than one result, and if I did, then I say, hey man, your account already exists. If the account doesn't exist, I make one. I put the fields in as the starting values, and I store it in the database. And that's it. And then I put the username in the session to indicate that they've logged in, and then I'm done. I render it. So that's, you know, that's the database stuff right there. That's no SQL, no insert. Yeah? Say that again.
So this is open as a database, this app accesses, can another application no longer access
that?
No.
There's no way to. They are completely isolated from one another. Right. They would want you to build a little REST interface and for you to talk to yourself. They want them to sort of be very consistent in what they do and be isolated. I mean, imagine if you had like 5,000 developers hacking in your system. Would you want them sneaking around and looking at each other's databases?
I was just wondering if there was a mechanism to actually
say
this application.
Right. Nope. Yeah?
The limit equals 1 is the number of results you expect back.
Yes.
Okay. And give stars?
Yes.
50, yep.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. That's how you page. So it just understands kind of paging very implicitly. What it's saying is, however you group them, you're only going to get a total of 1,000 back. Now that doesn't mean you couldn't write a loop and hit them a couple of times and get more than 1,000, but at some point you run into that 3-second barrier. You can sort them. You can tell them to sort them.
And that has to be done in the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell what you want. This is an extremely simple one, just looking for existence. Okay, so let's run this code. Oops. Yeah.
Is that just convention then, that
dot
put method on the object?
No, the put method is a documented part of the DB object. Put is insert in the, or update in the database. So that the moment of put, this moment, that moment is like an SQL insert.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot that your user extends the memory.
Exactly. And that's where that comes from. Okay, so let's take a look at this. It's this weird little world, but it's nice and consistent. So I'm going to create a new account, Chuck, CSEV, with a password of X. Yikes! What did I do wrong? How about if I may, let's see if I, maybe it was because I didn't save it. I saved it. I didn't save it. So now it's working. So the question is, how do we know that it's working? Well, let me show you. This is one thing that's cool. Well, actually, I don't even need to do this. I'm going to go back to my launcher. I'm going to click a different button, the SDK console. This is your database viewer. And so we have one kind of thing in our database, and we can say list all the entries. And so now we are reading. This is kind of like PHP MySQL admin or whatever it is. We are now reading our database. And we can see that it's in there. It's got a password of X and CSEV, and so there's a thing there. And you can edit this. And so this is the, in a sense, the development console. Oh, I won't say that. I'll save changes. This is a development console. And it's just at this URL, kind of a funky URL. But that's code that's built into every application, basically. You can actually use this when you're up and deployed, and it uses your Google account to determine whether you're an administrator, but we're local, so it just lets us do it no matter what. There's no authorization to do this.
Just another simple question. The database here, is it local?
This is local, and it's just flat files at this point.
It's just flat files.
Right now. This is not designed to be scalable on your hard drive, so you wouldn't run this in production. There are open source activities to try to re-implement this framework so that you could run it on your own hardware and actually, you know, do something. This just finds, if you look in the deepest logs, you find it's just throwing crap in temp for a while. This is just for us to develop.
But then in the cloud, it would be more like very quick, or there'd be a slightly different database when we flat file, would it be?
No, it's sharded. It's sharded Bigtable, basically. Your data is in Google's Bigtable.
Do they do like any indexing or like
tons of it?
Parent child. Do we do it?
All no, well, they you do. It's a bit of both. I mean, there is hierarchy that's provided. You don't have to add hierarchy. Hierarchy is included.
It's a relational database.
It is not a relational database. Think of it as an object database that has links to other objects. So when you traverse the link, you go down the link. So you got to be careful, because the join is a wonderful thing in terms of data reduction, right? There is no concept of join.
Nope.
There is relationships that you traverse one at a time. So you find that the most highly scalable applications engage a bit in denormalization because of that. Right? You denormalize a little bit.
A little bit.
You denormalize a little bit, and that's actually part of the art of this whole thing. But again, think about Gmail. Imagine writing Gmail, right? You want it all isolated. You create these silos of data, and my Gmail doesn't mess with your Gmail. That's why they don't have that's why Google doesn't have Facebook yet. Because Facebook is highly relational. If you think about the fact that everyone's got like 931 friends, and the thing that's important are the, you know, what those people say, how Facebook makes it go fast is some magical SQL. What Google does is they basically say, we're not going to let you things do things that we don't know how to make go fast. And you are the great unwashed. You don't even know. You can't hurt yourself so much here. Whereas you can write joins at Facebook. The Facebook really is trusting their developers not to trash their environment. Google is just not letting you trash the environment. It's a different philosophy.
Yeah, I'm getting my head around this.
Yeah, it's why it hasn't taken off like crazy. And I think of it as, I think of it philosophically as Google has revealed what makes their thing tick to us. And we are knitting our brow as we react to it. And we are learning more.
What happens if you go work for a company, thousands of parts, okay, car parts, thousands of customers, you know, how do you even start there? Because you normally draw a table with thousands of links between all the tables, but how do you even start off with this?
Well, the first thing to realize is that the stock and trade of a web application is a page. And so the amount of information on that page necessarily, in a nice way, limits the amount of information that you need. So if you're going to create a page that's got 100,000 parts and 100,000 cars and all the combinations of parts and cars on a single page, No. Right. Simple answer. And you could almost get away with that in SQL if you really kind of worked and did this stuff, right? But why would you? And so what Google's trying to say is, imagine that a page has a finite amount of information in it. Don't retrieve more information than you need. And so you have to go back maybe 4 or 5 times for a few more little things. Now you can actually get a list of keys from your related entities and get them all in one query, right? So you kind of do joins sort of like in a two-step process, and you can, as long as you're not doing too much, and you think about this 1,000 thing, and it's all about getting the right data, because it's all about, for Google, we're all sharing the same 10,000 spinning disks. And if you end up making them do 75 seeks because of an n log n kind of thing inside of a join, then all the other people are waiting. It's like all these little birds are flying through this thing, and we're all behind each other. And if one person stalls a server, then it packs up. And because the data's on that server, they can't afford it. So they want to force you as if you worked for them, right? So you're like, boy, that sucks, right? Because I'll just buy a bigger computer if I want to program in an irresponsible fashion, because we're used to doing that. And what they're saying is, you work for us, man. We're not buying you more computers. And so you better darn well figure out how to work in an efficient fashion. And you're right, it's a different philosophy. It is like working for Google. And the boss just says, sorry, change your app. Don't show so much data. Yeah. Right, and that's an interesting philosophy, right? Because at some point, if you think of things like Hibernate, exactly. Where Hibernate falls over is in joins. Now, I hate Hibernate because everyone who ever designs Hibernate designs joins, right? They take the same stupid data model and then try to convince Hibernate to write efficient joins, and it's not capable of doing it. And so this is, in a sense, even more draconian than Hibernate, because it's like you can't even cheat and make a join work in this. You simply must come up with what comes on that screen and come up with an efficient way to retrieve that information, including making indexes and clever things and lists of things and slight denormalization. It's like you must, it's a web application. It's not just a arbitrary thing, right? When I throw 20 terabytes of data at you, you just have to stop using relational.
Yeah, but
you just have to.
I've written the SQL statements that are like...
Me too.
1,000 bytes.
Me too.
With nots and if and...
And it's lovely.
I'm just saying, how do you do it if you can't write SQL? I must write something to get that data out.
Oh, there's a query language. I just showed you the very simplest version of the query language. There is a query language, and there is index mechanisms, and there's parent-child. The key thing is, it's not a join. It will, as long as the many-to-many relationships are not large, right? So if you watch one of those Google App Engine things, what you'll see is you will see them say, wow, we figured out how to do many-to-many relationships on the order of 1,000. Use this list pattern and store keys only and denormalize the keys, but don't denormalize the data, and do a single key-oriented get to get the second half. If you're trying to do a friends, right, and that's what you're doing, and it's order of 1,000, they've got a way to do that, right? But if you're saying, I've got 1,000,000 and I want to sort by, they're saying, can't do it, right? So the answer is, you can do many to many. You just got to end up with the right amount. And there are things that it just can't do yet. Yeah, I mean, so... Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think it's part of it. I think that the problem is everyone wants to write social applications right now, and social applications are many-to-many problems in general, right? And so this is, when you go to Google I/O, when I went to the last Google I/O, they're every May, one of the talks was all about many-to-many. And I saw one of the people that does Best Buy's got a thing called Gift Tag, or Next Tag, or something, where you can like tag the gifts that you want, and you know, people can buy gifts for each other. And it was one of the kind of the biggest App Engine applications. And I know the guy that wrote it, right? And we're sitting in this talk. And this guy that I know, who's one of the people that wrote this application, it was on the front of Google App Engine. And this guy, Brent Slacken, who's in many of the videos, was giving this talk about many to many. And you can watch this same talk. And kind of like you guys, I was like I almost get close to it. I don't necessarily get it. And I heard this guy behind me exclaim when Brett gave this little many to many up to 1,000. He goes like, whoa, awesome, right? And this guy was the guy that had built the biggest application that I was aware of. The point where Google actually talked to him, right? That's how big their application was. And so this just suggests that we're learning as we go, right? And that it's dangerous for now to try to write, you know, a billion person Friendster on this thing, right? And so the question I think that's important is what are the use cases for this? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure they've figured out, and I'm sure there are certain things. I mean, let me just give you an example of Google. You've got to think differently when you got 10,000 servers and everyone's sharing them, as compared to you've got 4 servers, and if you slow down, you slow down, and you just get one pissed user. If you go to Google and you search, and it tells you have 1 billion, or you've got 150,000, has anyone ever clicked to the end of the world? Has anyone ever done it?
You don't get that, do you?
Does anyone know how far you get to go?
Yeah, about 30, 40 pages, and then it's kind of stopped.
Yeah, it's on the order of like 5,000 results. The results stop after 5,000. Okay? The results stop after 5,000. They don't give you more results. If you keep hitting next, at some point the results end.
So they never had them in the first place. They got the number, but they haven't got the results. They just got you the first 1,000 results.
Okay, so why is that? It's really simple. If you go back, unfortunately you didn't hear Marissa's talk. If you understand Marissa's talk, you say, okay, so how does Google actually work? It doesn't miss a trick when it comes to the top 10 pages, and they're always the same. So what does it do? It split the entire internet across 10,000 servers, and it sends the query to the 10,000 servers, and it says, Dr. Chuck, each of you 10,000 servers, you show me your top 10 results. Now in that, you have the top 10 results for the whole web. That's what you've got. You are guaranteed that the top 10 are always in your final reconnecting of the data. But they have to limit the amount of data each server sends out. And so that means that the total number of requests on anything is finite. And that's why if you keep paging down, you will run out of requests. It's some combination of the number of requests they asked for per server times the number of servers it went to. And that's just a fixed number. I mean, they don't change it dynamically. But the idea is that the nature of search is if the top 10, the first page, are what really matters. And if you ask for 10 from each one, by golly, you got the top 10. Oh, and you ask how many they had each one, too. And then you add those numbers up, and you have the total number. And you take advantage of the situation and the natural nature of the application. And this is why Google doesn't just make any old application. They don't have airline reservations at Google, right? They don't have them. They might be able to search, you know, the on-time departure average for all airlines since the last 10,000 years or something, right? Because they can do that, and then they can come up with this reduction mechanism. So the way this is really going forward is Google is slowly revealing the magic that until 2 years ago, we had no idea how they did this. We had no idea how they did this. And all of us in this room are going to end up with multi-terabyte data sets. A lot of the things that we're talking about here at Dev8D are data that boggles the mind. Right now we're just bitching about we don't have enough data. Well, pretty soon we're going to bitch about having too much data. And all this Sparkle stuff is going to fail when there's actually sufficient data for it to be useful. I mean, it's a self-fulfilling failure, right? But this is not. This data model can deal with that kind of data if we put enough compute power. And there's going to be more in storage and more compute. It's going to be in tiny little dust molecules, right? And I'm not a fanciful guy, but they are going to be dust molecules with a terabyte in it that are 50 gigahertz processors. And they'll just sit in a trash can somewhere, and it'll have all the data. And if we can structure our queries the right way, we can do amazing things. And Google is helping us. And so you're angry at Google. Damn it, why don't you give me join? And the answer is, in the future, there is no join, young Skywalker. There is no join in the future, Skywalker. We have trash cans full of dust computers. There is no join. It's the end of relational databases as we know it. When you saw a terabyte disk sitting in Best Buy for $100 or £100 for a terabyte of data, relational databases are dead. So it's just a question of how long we know until they are dead.
That's a serious point, you think?
I think it's, and I am so glad that Google's revealing it, because what's happening, the exciting thing, the place to go learn about this is Hadoop. You may never have not have heard about Hadoop, but what Hadoop is...
Is it under Bing?
No, it's under Apache, thank God. So Hadoop is an Apache project that is basically ripping off Google's idea. As soon as Google reveals an idea, these hackers go build a Google-like thing. The Hadoop cluster, the Hadoop file system, the Hadoop query language. So Google App Engine is just kind of like a place for all of us to touch and learn. But if you were to build a e-science super cluster that had, you know, all the utterances of the human race for the last one millennia, well, you would put that in Hadoop. And then you would put a query engine in front of Hadoop that would work like Google. And all of a sudden, you've got the power of Google in Hadoop. Right, Hadoop is a, if you start looking at some of the underlying technology, you see this sharding, you see this, there's the documents are on like three servers and it's automatic. There's a lot of brilliant stuff that goes on here. But the net result is you just, with Hadoop, you send out little birds to go look at data and they bring back little tiny amounts and then you aggregate them. It's called MapReduce is what Hadoop does. And this is MapReduce. Right, MapReduce is kind of stupid unless you have so large a data that you can do it no other way, and then MapReduce is brilliant. Right, MapReduce allows you to apply more spinning spindles and more CPUs and more RAM to a problem to make a priorly untractable problem tractable.
Bing is based on Hadoop.
It is?
Yes.
It could be.
Yeah, Bing includes Hadoop-driven
super cool, awesome, good decision. I'm sure they have a C to C sharp translator in there somewhere.
I wonder what Oracle thinks about all this.
I know people at Oracle, and Oracle is like the devil. You know, it's like the devil basically. Oracle knows everything, right? Oracle is always a step ahead of the game, and they will at the moment that Hadoop would be a threat to them. They will have 11H.
Hadoop.
Yeah. Right? 11H will come out. And it will be just enough Hadoop. It's the safe subset of Hadoop that the corporate world needs. Right? And so you don't assume that Oracle's like, ooh, Hadoop, that's going to surprise us. Nothing surprises Oracle. But they're also not going to be the ones that sort of invest in it in the future. They're the ones that are going to like, make the money off the data mining things and tell the corporate guys, well, you don't want to use that open source Hadoop. You really want to use 11H, right? 11H is what you really want, because that Hadoop stuff, I mean, I heard a really bad story about this guy who did Hadoop and he didn't do 11G and now he's working at a coffee shop and, you know, you don't want that to happen to you, right? I know it's a lot of money for 11H, but... So Oracle just takes advantage and just skims the cream off all these things. But Hadoop, the cool thing about Hadoop is just one of many Apache projects, and last year's Hadoop conference was bigger than the Apache conference where all the other projects got together. So that tells you, so I know a friend of mine just changed jobs and he's working on Hadoop. And so it's not just fanciful. An App Engine is a toy to play with as computer scientists. It's like, let's noodle, because I don't know, some of you in this room have gray hair like myself. When I first saw relational databases, I thought, this is the dumbest thing ever. This is so stupid. Are you familiar with sorted B-trees? Everything I ever saw, like join. Like, why would you ever join anything together? Look how big that thing gets. And you have to wait till the whole thing gets big and then throw it away. Like, what the? What an idiot would come up with a joint thing. I can't believe these math retards come up with this stuff, right? What were they thinking? Probably a bunch of British people came up with that. They're the math types. We Americans just sort of... Yeah. So this is just a crazy thing foisted on us computer scientists by crazy mathematicians, right? Well, that was just a really bad implementation of relational databases, so that B-trees were better than relational databases in the first 2 years of relational databases. Now, we computer scientists and developers think relational databases are the best thing ever because we figured out of n log n and all the hashing, and it's like all the research, all these, and we academics actually were part of the fixing of it, right? We said, oh, well, crap, joints aren't so bad, and they can be done this, and journal article, Oracle, suck, right? MySQL, suck, journal article, and now here we are at a point where the answer to everything is these amazing joins. And the answer is, but we've reached the limit of what they're capable of doing. We cannot find another mathematical trick. We have reached in join what the mathematicians predicted would happen. And it just took 10 years to get there for us to build the implementations. But we have reached the theoretical limit of joins. We can't improve them. And now we're saying, denormalized data. I know it hurts, but you know what? If you throw 10,000 processors at it, not so bad. And if it turns out that the human mind can only really handle a certain amount of cognitive load of information, the key thing is not to bring back a terabyte and show it to us, right? Let us hit the next button once in a while. So if you think of Gmail, Gmail's goal is not to have all your email in RAM. Gmail's goal is to get you to one page and get you reading as quick as possible, showing you as little as possible. It's all denormalized. I mean, if you go look at Facebook, most of the pages in Facebook come from Memcache. They don't even come from a database anymore. They pre-compute the pages, and they pull them out of Memcache. That's another thing I haven't talked about. Chapter 12 of the book, by the way, it's an awesome book. Chapter 12 of the book talks about Memcache, and the thing that I've learned in the last year is if you really want your application to scale, you don't even want to use the data store. If you can help it, you should use Memcache for everything. And so, right? So Memcache, what is it? It's a giant distributed hash, network-based distributed hash. And Facebook has thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of servers that do nothing but our RAM with a network connection. And they do Memcache, and it's fast. It's fun to have former students working at all these companies.
What happens to the 5,000 first thing that you want to find? Are you saying Google will never produce that?
Right. They can't.
So it's lost.
No. Well, no. They have the data. Yeah. And if PageRank moved that up in the list, you'll always get the 5,000 top ones. But the ones that don't belong in the 5,000 top ones, they won't show you.
So they lost forever?
No, I mean, yeah, how many of people got to on the next button?
Most people lose the will to live at least at the page 20, so.
Yeah, exactly. Lose the will to live, exactly. I was quite surprised when I found this out.
I was very generous with page 20, I think.
Yeah. I was amazed when I found this out. And again, I encourage you to watch 3 or 4 of these talks that are in my slides. The Marissa Meyer one, watch it cover to cover, right? The Brett Slacken one from Google I.O. that talks about the many-to-many, it exposes. And the one, I don't know the name of the guy, but he's the kind of tall guy, the one that he has the dots on his shirt. He was talking about Bigtable and the philosophy of indexes and keys. And again, I can't digest it all, but I'm sure 20 years from now we'll say like, oh, crap, why are we switching away from this really sweet and totally cool thing, right? You know, whatever the next thing will happen when, you know, it's smaller than dust. I don't know what. Right, but it's really fun, I think, to be at a kind of a articulation point in technology where everything that we thought was right is wrong. And
it's a bit like with like chess programs,
yeah,
they used to go, well, shall we take rook files and shall we do this strategy? But the best ones now just try every position. They just try every one. There's no
just,
strategy.
Just bludgeon. Exactly. It is a sharding approach rather than an algorithmic approach. No progressive deepening, no alpha beta pruning, just use the bad hammer.
Unintelligent design.
What?
It is actually.
Right.
No, it makes sense.
Yeah,
that's
no.
The universe is designed.
Well, I agree with that. Yeah, it's numerical rather than.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, you know, and we start talking about genetic algorithms, the ability to make tractable problems tractable by changing the game, right? So we spend all this time on n and n log n and np and all this stuff. It's like, oh, np. Well, who cares if you got a big enough hammer? np's okay. You just need the size of the hammer, right? And so we, as computer scientists, have backed ourselves into this, like, don't look at np. It will burn your back of your eyes. You'll turn to a pillar of salt. Just run. Just don't look back. Oh, she looked back. Damn it. You know, as you're running away from Sodom and Gomorrah. We're running away from Sodom and Gomorrah. Don't look back. And the answer is, Google looked back and they made billions, right? They looked at it. Just had the right glasses. And they had the right glasses not because they were smarter than us. They had the right glasses because they focused on the problem that they wanted to solve and were not limited by what was the conventional limitations. And it's like, we're going to search everything and crap, this SQL doesn't work, so we're going to like make it in files. Ooh, and then we're going to spread those files across computers. Ooh, and then we got to make an index that's, oh, but that's index has got to be spread across computers too. Ooh. They just derived it sort of one thing at a time. And then, ooh, now we got 500 programmers and this one guy just screwed things up. Like, let's make a rule that you can't do that because then we can't have this one stupid programmer screw all of Google up because we're sharing these servers because we've spread them so far. And they're all pipelined. The network and everything is a pipeline. So in a tenth of a second, the start of one is another, and you must there must be thousands in flight in a pipeline going through 10,000 servers at the same time. It's freaky. It's cool. I mean, it's and it you could imagine that it does border on intelligence when you get far enough, because it is gestalt. It is starting to model a gestalt-like approach to technology. Where you can examine, when I look at a face, I see all the other faces instantly, and I know that I've met you before, which I haven't met you, but when I see a face, I see in my mind there is no loop. All the faces I've ever met before are present, available, gestalt, and it reduces to one. And it says, like, the person I'm looking at has zero matches in your face database, but it happens in the same amount of time, no matter how many people I've met. And so it's, you know.
But don't you find as you get older, you run out of places? I recognize everybody now.
Yeah. Just tag people. Yeah. You're a category 8. You got like 953 categories. Yeah. No, but it's a gestalt thing, right? It's, I'm not sure vision or other things, but a lot of intelligence, right? So so let's just do a little gestalt experiment. What's the last line of the children's book, Where the Wild Things Are? See, that's probably not a. That's
yeah,
a.
Supper, he went to bed, something like that.
No, you're getting close. Has anybody got it? What? No. Okay, maybe this book made far more impression on me than everyone else. Yeah. Damn it. And it was still hot.
Yeah.
And it was still hot, right? And so, in a sense, that if you ask Google that question, it knows the answer, right? Just like a human, right? You went and you saw every book and you saw every picture of that book. You were gestalting things that are computationally very difficult. But Google kind of gestalts the same way. So, now we're in philosophy. Okay, well, I think you can probably put this code in because you're all programmers, but you've got all the materials to sort of paste all those things in and play a bit with it. And I hope we've sort of opened it up and you've got places to wander forward.
Very good.
So. Thank you.